Chapter 7. New faces, and your wisdom lies in bringing your acquisitions into safety, while her favor lasts. To do that you must make friends in her time of smiles, make friends with people, wherever you find them. My daughter has unconsciously followed that maxim. She has struck up a warm friendship with our neighbor, Miss Power, at the castle. We are diametrically different from her in associations, traditions, ideas, religion. She comes of a violent dissenting family among other things, but I say to Charlotte, what I say to you. Win affection and regard wherever you can, and accommodate yourself to the times. I put nothing in the way of their intimacy, and wisely so, for by this, so many pleasant hours are added to the sum total vouchsafed to humanity. ... It was quite late in the afternoon when Somerset took his leave. Miss Destancy did not return to the castle that night, and he walked through the wood as he had come, feeling that he had been talking with a man of simple nature, who flattered his own understanding by devising Machiavellian theories after the event, to account for any spontaneous action of himself or his daughter, which might otherwise seem eccentric or irregular. Before Somerset reached the inn, he was overtaken by a slight shower, and on entering the house he walked into the general room, where there was a fire, and stood with one foot on the fender. The landlord was talking to some guest who sat behind the screen, and, probably because Somerset had been seen passing the window, and was known to be sketching at the castle, the conversation turned on Sir William Destancy. I have often noticed, observed the landlord, that folks who have come to grief, and quite failed, have the rules how to succeed in life more at their fingers' ends than folks who have succeeded. I assure you that Sir William, so full as he is of wise maxims, never acted upon a wise maxim in his life, until he had lost everything, and it didn't matter whether he was wise or no. You know what he was in his young days, of course? No, I don't, said the invisible stranger. Oh, I thought everybody knew poor Sir William's history. He was the star, as I may say, of good company 40 years ago. I remember him in the height of his jinx, as I used to see him when I was a very little boy, and think how great and wonderful he was. I can seem to see now the exact style of his clothes. White hat, white trousers, white silk handkerchief, and his jonic face, as white as his clothes with keeping late hours. There was nothing black about him, but his hair and his eyes he wore, no beard at that time, and they were black as sloughs. The like of his coming on the racecourse was never seen there afore nor since. He drove his equipage hisself, and it was always hauled by 4 beautiful white horses, and 2 outriders rode in harness bridles. There was a groom behind him, and another at the rubbing post, all in livery as glorious as New Jerusalem. What establishment he kept up at that time! I can mind him, sir, with 30 race horses in training at once, 17 coach horses, 12 hunters at his box t'other side of London, 4 chargers at Budmouth, and ever so many hacks. And he lost all by his racing speculations? The stranger observed, and Somerset fancied that the voice had in it something more than the languid carelessness of a casual sojourner. Partly by that, partly in other ways. He spent a mint o' money in a wild project of founding a watering place, and sunk thousands in a useless silver mine, so 'twas no wonder that the castle named after him fell into other hands. The way it was done was curious. Mr. Wilkins, who was the first owner after it went from Sir William, actually sat down as a guest at his table, and got up as the owner. He took off, at a round sum, everything saleable, furniture, plate, pictures, even the milk and butter in the dairy. That's how the pictures and furniture come to be in the castle still, worm-eaten rubbish so moat, and hardly worth moving. And off went the baronet to Myrtle Villa? Oh no, he went away for many years. practice quite lately, since his illness, that he came to that little place, in sight of the stone walls that were the pride of his forefathers. From what I hear, he is not the manner of a broken-hearted man? Not at all. Since that illness he has been happy, as you see him. No pride, quite calm and mild, at new moon quite childish. Tis that makes him able to live there. Before he was so ill he couldn't bear a sight of the place, but since then he is happy nowhere else, and never leaves the parish further than to drive once a week to Markton. His head won't stand society nowadays, and he lives quite lonely as you see, only seeing his daughter, or his son whenever he comes home, which is not often. They say that, if his brain hadn't softened a little he would have died, 'twas that saved his life. What's this I hear about his daughter? Is she really hired companion to the new owner? Now that's a curious thing again, these two girls being so fond of one another, one of them a dissenter, and all that, and t'other a distancy. Oh no, not hired exactly, but she mostly lives with Miss Power, and goes about with her, and I dare say Miss Power makes it worth her while. One can't move a step without the other following, though judging by ordinary votes you'd think 'twould be a cat and dog friendship rather. Tis not. They be more like lovers than maid and maid. Miss Power is looked up to by little Distancy, as if she were a god almighty, and Miss Power lets her love her to her heart's content. But whether Miss Power loves back again I can't say, for she's as deep as the North Star. The landlord here left the stranger, to go to some other part of the house, and Somerset drew near to the glass partition, to gain a glimpse of a man whose interest in the neighborhood seemed to have arisen so simultaneously with his own. But the inner room was empty. The man had apparently departed by another door. Why? The telegraph had almost the attributes of a human being at Stancy Castle. When its bell rang people rushed to the old tapestried chamber allotted to it, and waited its pleasure with all the deference due to such a novel inhabitant of that ancestral pile. This happened on the following afternoon about 4 o'clock, while Somerset was sketching in the room adjoining, that occupied by the instrument. Hearing its call, he looked in to learn if anybody were attending, and found Miss Distancy bending over it. She welcomed him without the least embarrassment. Another message, she said. Paula to Charlotte. Have returned to Markton. I'm starting for home. We'll be at the gate between 4 and 5 if possible. Miss Distancy blushed with pleasure when she raised her eyes from the machine. Is she not thoughtful to let me know beforehand? Somerset said she certainly appeared to be, feeling at the same time that he was not in possession of sufficient data to make the opinion of great value. Now I must get everything ready and order what she will want, as Mrs. Goodman is away. What will she want? Dinner would be best as he has had no lunch, I know, or tea perhaps, and dinner at the usual time. Still, if as he has had no lunch, hark, what do I hear? She ran to an narrow slit, and Somerset, who had also heard something, looked out of an adjoining one. They could see from their elevated position a great way along the white road, stretching like a tape amid the green expanses on each side. There had arisen a cloud of dust, accompanied by a noise of wheels. It is she, said Charlotte. Oh yes, it is past 4, the telegram has been delayed. How would she be likely to come? As he has doubtless hired a carriage at the inn. She said it would be useless to send to meet her, as she couldn't name a time. Where is she now? Just where the boughs of those beeches overhang the road, there she is again. Miss Distancy went away to give directions, and Somerset continued to watch. The vehicle, which was of no great pretension, soon crossed the bridge and stopped. There was a ring at the bell, and Miss Stancy reappeared. Did you see her as she drove up? Is she not interesting? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I could not see her. Apostrophe, apostrophe, ah, no, of course you could not from this window, because of the trees. Mr. Somerset, will you come downstairs? You will have to meet her, you know. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Somerset felt an indescribable backwardness. I will go on with my sketching, apostrophe, he said. Perhaps she will not be apostrophe, oh, but it would be quite natural, would it not? Our manners are easier here, you know, than they are in town, and Miss Power has adapted herself to them. Apostrophe, apostrophe, a compromise was effected by Somerset declaring that he would hold himself in readiness to be discovered on the landing at any convenient time. A servant entered. Miss Power? Apostrophe, said Mr. Stancy, before he could speak. The man advanced with a card. Mr. Stancy took it up, and read thereon. Apostrophe, Mr. William Dare. Apostrophe, apostrophe, it is not Miss Power who has come, then? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she asked, with a disappointed face. No, ma'am. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she looked again at the card. This is some man of business, I suppose. Does he want to see me? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, miss. Leastwise, he would be glad to see you, if Miss Power is not at home. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Stancy left the room, and soon returned, saying, apostrophe, Mr. Somerset, can you give me your counsel in this matter? This Mr. Dare says he is a photographic amateur, and it seems that he wrote some time ago to Miss Power, who gave him permission to take views of the castle, and promised to show him the best points. But I have heard nothing of it, and scarcely know whether I ought to take his word in her absence. Mrs. Goodman, Miss Power's relative, who usually attends to these things, is away. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I dare say it is all right, apostrophe, said Somerset. Would you mind seeing him? If you think it quite in order, perhaps you will instruct him where the best views are to be obtained. Apostrophe, apostrophe, thereupon Somerset at once went down to Mr. Dare. His coming as a sort of counterfeit of Miss Power disposed Somerset to judge him with as much severity as justice would allow, and his manner for the moment was not of a kind calculated to dissipate antagonistic instincts. Mr. Dare was standing before the fireplace with his feet wide apart, and his hands in the pockets of his coattails, looking at a carving over the mantelpiece. He turned quickly at the sound of Somerset's footsteps, and revealed himself as a person quite out of the common. His age it was impossible to say. There was not a hair on his face which could serve to hang a guess upon. In repose he appeared a boy, but his actions were so completely those of a man that the beholder's first estimate of 16 as his age was hastily corrected to 26, and afterwards shifted hither and thither along intervening years as the tenor of his sentences sent him up or down. He had a broad forehead, vertical as the face of a bastion, and his hair, which was parted in the middle, hung as a fringe or valance above, in the fashion sometimes affected by the other sex. He wore a heavy ring, of which the gold seemed fair, the diamond questionable, and the taste indifferent. There were the remains of a swagger in his body and limbs as he came forward, regarding Somerset with a confident smile, as if the wonder were not why Mr. Dare should be present, but why Somerset should be present likewise. And the first tone that came from Dare's lips wound up his listener's opinion that he did not like him. A latent power in the man, or boy, was revealed by the circumstance that Somerset did not feel, as he would ordinarily have done, that it was a matter of profound indifference to him whether this gentleman photographer were a likable person or no. I have called by appointment, or rather, I left a card stating that today would suit me, and no objection was made. Apostrophe, apostrophe, Somerset recognized the voice. It was that of the invisible stranger who had talked with the landlord about the Stancys. Mr. Dare then proceeded to explain his business. Somerset found from his inquiries that the man had unquestionably been instructed by somebody to take the views he spoke of, and concluded that Dare's curiosity at the inn was, after all, naturally explained by his errand to this place. Blaming himself for a too hasty condemnation of the stranger, who though visually a little too assured was civil enough verbally, Somerset proceeded with the young photographer to sundry corners of the outer ward, and thence across the moat to the field, suggesting advantageous points of view. The office, being a shadow of his own pursuits, was not uncongenial to Somerset, and he forgot other things in attending to it. Now in our country we should stand further back than this, and so get a more comprehensive coup deal, apostrophe said Dare, as Somerset selected a good situation. You are not an Englishman, then, apostrophe said Somerset. I have lived mostly in India, Malta, Gibraltar, the Ionian Islands, and Canada. I there invented a new photographic process, which I am bent upon making famous. Yet I am but a dilettante, and do not follow this art at the base dictation of what men call necessity. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.